going on the conference call now, dash Google it to see, period. Long time no see.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. You're busy. You're a busy man.
Yeah, things are crazy.
Is it all good?
Yeah, I guess.
Uh-oh. You're 713, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure no one else is on the call. So.
Yeah, no, I called in with my phone because my computer doesn't do the... So, you want me to...
No, it's fine. I just wanted to make sure. I wanted to let you know that, and maybe I did let you know, that Deb Frocht, who's the CEO at Louisville, thought it was great if Laura can come on as the co-chair. So I was going to have this meeting with you now, tell you I'll reach out to her and CC you to start the conversation.
And sorry, say what?
And I'll write to her and CC you just to start the conversation about as the co-chair.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. Okay.
I just didn't want to do it without telling you first, right? And we'll have this call. So basically at 1 o'clock today, I had this exact same call that you thought of, right? The security concerns. I said we didn't have anything for the small agency execs. This is back in the day. So I wrote the same invitation. And we had around 26 small agency execs on the call. And it was a really good conversation. So I'm sure this one will, right? We talked a little bit about, you know, how they felt as the number ones trying to manage the anxiety, their own anxiety, and the anxiety of their, you know, staff, volunteers, clients, etc. Right. So anyway, I'm sure this will be a good conversation because these people talk. Your COOs are a good group.
Well, and I think, unfortunately, it's just, it's a timely thing that everyone's dealing with in lots of different ways. And no matter what part of the country you're in, there's some sort of something going on. And right. It's unfortunate, but it's right. Just part of the world we live in.
So what I'm going to do, Carl, yes, on that, about this conference, and you being the program showcase person, listen, you don't have to do it. You know, it's an honor. You feel stressed. You don't have to do it.
I you know what? I just don't know what it involves. That's all.
What it involves is you being there, not going to any other, you know, workshop during that time. And I switched your time potentially because, if you were going to do it, it would be Tuesday morning. And the reality is that you'd have to look and see if you'd want to miss out on anything Tuesday morning, okay? And what it entails is 8 different programs or something that you would have to introduce them. So I have written everything up. It'll be in order. But you'd have to move people along, make sure that the timer is set for 5 minutes or whatever it is that you're doing, your phone or whatever it is, and then thanking them and then, you know, bringing the next person up with their little bio and what their story is. And everything will be on the computer in a flash drive. And so it shouldn't be difficult because it should be right there. I mean, we've done it before. We may have, you know, 8 different PowerPoints on the computer. So you would just have to press the, you know, to make sure the PowerPoint was up and running. But there'll be an IT person in the program showcases from the hotel if something's wrong. But it's really just being able to move it along because at the end we want to have around 20 minutes for people to go to the back of the room. We're going to have tables set with 10 cards that say what the program is. And the person who presents it's going to be at their table. And if anyone's interested in talking more about it, they're going to go to the back and talk. So that's the program showcase. You know, you would also have to say the CEUs are in the back, sign in, you know, whatever. You know, introduce the...
Yeah. Yeah, but I write it up for you. I think that's fine.
Okay. So I want to make sure that you're not... When I originally had you, I thought it would be fine for you to be there, that you may not be interested in all the things or you know it already. But this one is the variety one, Poverty, Disability, Advocacy, and Leadership Showcase.
Okay.
Do you see what you're looking at? Oh, no.
So that would be the one that.
I'm wrong. You're mental health. I think you're the mental health showcase. Tuesday morning, the mental health showcase. I can send it to you again.
Okay. No, that's fine. I think it's fine.
Okay. I just didn't want you feeling pressure because, you know, the last thing I want to do is make you feel pressure because you're so terrific. And I don't want to put more pressure on you. So, two people are waiting. I'm going to let them in. Laura's one of them.
Sure.
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Who's in 609? Hi. Area code.
That's Jewish Family Services of Atlanta County.
And who am I talking with? Who is this?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. My name is Christina Swank. I'm the fleet and safety manager for the building.
Christina?
Yes.
K-R-I?
C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A.
H-R-I. Christina, and then you're from Atlanta County, Southern New Jersey?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I'll say. Wow, that's impressive that they that you guys have a security sweep or whatever you called yourself.
Yeah, our fleet and safety.
That's great. Laura, you're here? Can you hear us?
Laura Rogers. Laura can't make it and Rich Gitlin can't make it, so they asked me to cover the call.
Okay, right, Southern New Jersey. There's another Laura on the call.
Okay.
From Louisville. Can you hear us? Maybe not. And 713 is Carl. I'm going to write that. That's Carl's phone. Okay. I muted you, Christina, because there was a little bit of noise from your phone. If you want to unmute yourself, just go in the top right corner and click unmute.
Okay.
Laura, can you hear us from Louisville? I feel like I'm Houston. Come in, Houston. You know, half the time. It was a shocker about Kobe Bryant yesterday. Seemed like the whole world was upset.
Well, and it sounds like from the news that one of his children was on the plane with him.
I know.
Just even more upsetting.
Right. We have 25 people that said they were going to be here. Did I? So that's a lot. Atlanta, huh? Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I don't think we've ever, have we seen you before, Beth?
I think one time, but my video wasn't working. I was on, but without the video.
Okay, that's so funny. So it's good to see you.
Good to see you.
And there's my twin. It's no longer my twin because I dyed my hair a different color. It's still curly coming out. So I'm not going to be able to have that curly, fabulous hair like you anymore. Mm-hmm. So that was it. It was fun while it lasted. Okay.
How's the weather by everybody?
Not bad in New Jersey.
Good.
How about you?
Well, we had a cold front come through Saturday night. Got down to about 45, which for us is like sub below. So, but it's been in the 60s, which is cold for us. I mean, that's unusually cold.
Yeah, what about you, Lee? 60s? That's like summer day.
It's like 80 up here in Minneapolis. You know, it's actually Judy just actually said It's not been nearly as bad as last winter. Last winter, we got all the cold and the snow. Mm-hmm. But sadly, it started after the Super Bowl. So I don't think we're out of the woods yet. But it's been okay.
Yeah. You know,
it's That's right good. Now, it's probably 30, which is pretty darn good for us.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
We've had very little snow this year. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, everyone said, oh, this is going to be the snowiest winter mm-hmm. ever. You know, we barely had anything.
As I said, there's still time.
Yeah. My daughter and her husband live in Albany, and my son-in-law happens to be a meteorologist, so we always get the weather updates, but they've had a very mild winter so far.
Yeah.
Well, that makes the meteorologist, everybody loves the meteorologist when it's mild.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. We're going up in February. We'll probably have a storm then. So.
So I think we should probably start in like 3 minutes because sometimes it takes a little bit of time to register on. So that's good. Let me just do this here. People are coming in.
She's
not on because we
got
all the messages.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stacy. Okay. Yeah, I saw Jonathan. He came on. Hi, Jonathan. Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes.
There you are.
No problem. You're on. So I put her in the calendar, and Ron checked all the messages, and there wasn't any messages from her. Because I double checked the messages too.
Who's that talking to us?
Recording.
Hi, Yulia.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Uh oh. A little bit of reverberation.
Is it better?
Is it better?
No.
No.
So, is that me talking? In your phone? That's weird. That's never happened. Oh. Is reverberating for everyone?
Yeah.
No. Well, I'm only hearing it through somebody else's phone.
Whose phone is that? That one. Is that you, Stacy? Okay, so I guess we're going to start, and I want to welcome everyone, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I had just mentioned to Carl that we had a meeting earlier today with the small agency executives on the same topic, and everyone had a lot to say, so I know this group is very verbose, so I'm looking forward to hearing that. And I don't know, Stacy, if this is going to be your last time with us. No, not for some time. Did I?
Right. Yeah, I don't transition until July. So, and we don't, we're just starting the search for a new COO.
Okay. So, if people haven't heard, Stacy has received the high honor of being the CEO, I guess, of Chicago, Mazel Tov. And another one of our COOs who's been on this call many times, Paul Blatt, also is taking on the reign of CEO of his agency, JVS Human Services. So,
that's great.
Congratulations, I guess, are in order. You know, it's a lot of responsibility, but it's terrific. So I guess that's it. We're expecting 25 people. I'll keep on letting them in. I know Carl, our fearless chair, is going to lead us in this discussion. So take it away, Carl.
Well, thanks everyone for making time out of your day. One of the things I thought would be a productive conversation is for us to talk about the complexities of the security issues that we're facing. It seems like regardless of what part of the country we're in, we've all had our own challenges. And I can speak for our agency that not only have we had board members and clients and volunteers be concerned, but we've also had staff who've expressed concerns about their safety and what we're doing. And so we've spent quite a bit of time and money over the last year sort of addressing safety issues through training, through changing how our building operates and the amount of security we have, you know, as far as, you know, guards and things like that. But I thought it would be, you know, good to talk about some of the common challenges and maybe best practices that are emerging. And then also, you know, if there's, if people have any input on funding sources that they've explored to look at how to manage the ongoing cost of the additional security, I think that would be, you know, helpful to, you know, to bring into the conversation as well.
Who wants to start?
Well, I can add that we moved recently within the last year to new offices. In that move to new offices, we established some new security protocols because we moved from being on the sixth floor of a building to ground floor. In that process, we installed doors that panic doors, basically. We installed video cameras. We installed multi levels of alarm systems. We installed intercoms so that our front door is always closed, and the only way to get through, you can get into our front door, but then there's a vestibule door and you have to buzz through for that vestibule door. We then had a security review by the police department. They made some additional concern. They made some additional recommendations. They weren't really serious concerns. And we'll be taking one or two additional steps, one of which is we'll be installing security film on our doors, which are glass doors that have glass pieces to them, I guess, glass facades.
We'll be Sounds like a lot those. Of money.
Well, so the window film, the glass film is not particularly expensive. It's reasonable. The intercom system was added as part and parcel of our updating our whole phone system because we're moving to new offices. So it was just sort of rolled in. The cameras we actually physically dismounted from our old offices and brought to our new offices and installed in new places. And the alarm system was in place, but we added some additional things, and the panic doors were basically they were kind of halfway in place, and we made some adjustments. So what our panic doors do is if somebody actually does get through our vestibule door, which they still have to be buzzed into, and they enter into our lobby space, and then there is a challenge, the receptionist who sits behind glass can press a button. It's actually a switch. It's a one-way switch, and that switch will lock all of the doors going from the lobby to all parts of our office.
Wow.
She can then retreat into that part of the office through a different door, and the assailant, or whatever you want to call the person, is inside our lobby and can't get out. I guess they could break through the glass of the receptionist, but that's none of these security measures are designed to stop the assailant. They're just designed to slow down an assailant. So same thing with the window film. It's just designed to slow them down.
We were not able to install a vestibule. We have a gate around our property, or we're a freestanding building. So you're buzzed into the gate and then buzzed into the front lobby. But then from the lobby, all of the doors that go into any other part of our building are through badge access only. So you need to have a security badge to get through. We did have to add, there is a stairwell and a elevator inside our lobby to the second floor. So that was unsecured. So we had to add a set of double doors at the top of the stairs in sort of a vestibule area so that at least if someone got to the top of the stairs, they couldn't then get into the rest of the building. We also secured some of our internal stairwells so that if a client or somebody got in, you know, was seeing someone for counseling, let's say, they couldn't sneak up the back stairwell up into the administrative offices. At the top of the stairs, you need a badge to get in to the top of the stairs from the stairwell. I mean, you can always go outside, but to try to limit access. And again, I think similar, I think, to what Jonathan was saying, trying to sort of create sort of smaller zones where you can sort of contain something until, you know, help arrives. We also doubled the number of cameras that we have. We had 16 cameras previously, most of them on the outside of the building, but we now have cameras inside throughout the whole facility so we can, and those cameras can be accessed remotely so that if we had to call for help, you know, a first responder could look inside the building and see what was going on and hopefully have a better feel of what they might be arriving, you know, to assist with. The other thing that our staff was really concerned about was that when they leave through the staff exit, there was no way to see if someone was standing outside that door, you know, waiting for them. So there's a camera now that shows the outside of that door, and it has a screen by the exit where the staff leaves. So they can look at the video monitor, and if somebody is lurking outside and that makes them uncomfortable, they can just go back to their office and call for help or call security or the police. We are also looking probably this year at adding some of the security film to the windows as you were talking about, and because our gates, our property, you need to be buzzed in. The concern was that if we had an event and we didn't want to slow down help from arriving on the property. So in a couple locations, there's now an emergency button where someone can push that button and essentially it'll open the gates and the gates will stay open until we manually close them, and that way first responders could come immediately onto the property and people could get out and the gates wouldn't close by timer. So that's a number of things that we've done, but it was an investment of about probably we've spent about $65,000 in the last year. And probably to do the remaining things that we'd like to do to the campus would probably be in the neighborhood of another 50 or so.
I can add just a couple of things. I actually have a couple of questions that I'm curious to know from others. So we moved into a new building 2 years ago. And so that provided opportunities that you kind of only get when you move into a new building. And I recognize that's different. We made some of similar choices to Stamford and Houston, but we made some very different choices as well, I would say, in terms of how people can walk in and receive services and not go through security. And I can speak to that if it's helpful. One thing on the funding front, we did get a Homeland Security grant, which I assume people are aware of through JFNA, and others have probably received those as well. And I know the funds for that have expanded. So that was a good source of funding. I'm curious, as either the first two or anybody else, in making some of those choices, you know, we thought about, well, what is our risk assessment? And we hired somebody to help us with that and so on. But I'm wondering, A, whether anybody has actually had any threats, credible threats, either that it was credible because you could see it or that it was deemed credible, by law enforcement, and or whether people are perceiving those threats to be uniquely because you're Jewish agencies, or whether those are the same kinds of threats that others might have based on the folks that may be coming there, just general concerns, your location, or that sort of thing?
We haven't had any credible threats. There was a period of time last year where all the local synagogues, including us, JCC, all the day schools were getting threats, but it was nothing that they could say was credible at all. That's just in our location.
Well, does it make your staff, you know, anxious when you have all these credible threats or, you know?
Very. Because we're made aware of it. We have a unique situation. So where I am now, we have a main campus, and the campus is, it's JFS, it's Federation, it's JCC, it is two day schools. We're all on one big campus. So Federation really takes care of the security for us, and they did get the one of the Homeland Security grants a couple of years ago. We have film on the windows. We do have security guards at two of our major entrances where, as a staff person, you have a decal on your car. If not, you go into the left lane, and for clinical clients coming through, we have to send them a list. Because clinical clients come through and they just say, we're coming to JFS. They're not allowed to ask due to confidentiality what the client's name is. And so they go through. If someone comes to the gate and their name is not at the gate, they're not let in unless we call them. But even still, we could have a financial assistance client coming here that we don't know that, you know, what their realm is. So when they come into our parking lot, we do have a camera on the parking lot that goes into our lobby. We have a buzzer system on our door. Those of us that are staff have a pass that have to be scanned in. When a client comes in, they have to buzz in. Receptionist lets them in, but to go back to the offices, it's a locked, both locked areas, just like you had said also. You'd have to have a swipe card to get through. So the only way they could possibly get through would be through a tiny reception little window. So, and we do have cameras internally here and film on the windows. And my other sites, we have three other sites. We have a senior center. We have another site where I have two departments, and then I have a food pantry. All those sites, we have cameras, interior and exterior cameras. We have like a 30-day backlog. In my senior center, we have a big screen TV in my director's office where she can have at any point in time 9 different rooms at a time so she can constantly see. We have a 30-day log for all the cameras. They have film on their windows, and we have a security guard there during our open area hours. It's another layer of security. It's not 100%, but it's another layer. And my other satellite office where I have senior services and current employment services, there are 2-door entrances, and we have swipe system to get in. When anybody comes into career employment services, it's a separate entrance where there's a receptionist. They have to show their ID because the only people coming in would be registered for a class. So we have to match the name with a license. So we do that since it's such a remote location. But again, we are in the process of putting film up on the windows. It's not very expensive, I agree. We do have interior and exterior cameras there as well. We have push bars on all of our doors, you know, leading out. And I think that's really it. I did have all of my sites, the local police departments do a security assessment. Were a little more thorough than the others, but it was consistent about the cameras. And my food pantry, they suggested there's just one door in and out, plus a large bay door that goes up. Putting a chime on the door just in case, you know, it's unlocked one day, which is rare, a chime goes off. But we're doing as much as we can. Federation, which is where our main campus is, they own these buildings, we rented from them. They have applied from the homeland and they got funding to put the film up, to do the cameras, you know, helps with the security guards, so on and so forth.
So can I ask you guys a question? How many of you all have armed security? Because that's a question we keep talking about in terms of the welcomingness of it. And we finished building out a lot of new stuff in 2016 when I first got there. And so there were a lot of upgrades, but the JCC has armed security. We do not. So that's one question I'd love to hear from people about. And then the other thing is, how do you train your reception? Because that is, the training is sort of as good as that is how good the security is going to be. So I'd love to hear from people about that as well.
We have an armed guard at our senior center, and we have one on our main campus, because you have to go through the guard gate, and there's like three or four armed guards there at all times, plus roving. How do we train? We did have police department come in and train our front office staff on what to look for, how then to react to certain situations as best as they could.
Okay.
Yeah, we added armed security here in Houston this year for every hour that we're open. We decided to contract with a security company. They're all licensed peace officers, and they carry a weapon. We get a daily report from them every single day. When we were using HPD, Houston police officers, you know, off-duty officers, I never would get a report. But now I get a report every single day of their activity throughout the day, anything that they've noticed. Do they take pictures of anything that, you know, is of concern to them, or call me right away? But it's the same person unless he's sick or on vacation. And so the staff got to know him very well, and so did the clients, and they actually feel very, very comfortable. And they've been actually very happy to have this individual here. There was one other question that you were asking.
About the training for reception.
Oh, the training. So we did two things. I partnered with the local ADL office to do a training specifically for anyone that is in sort of a front desk function or might be buzzing people into the door. And that was like a two-hour training where we did some, you know, videos and role-playing and all that kind of stuff. And then we have in the summertime, there's about a week where we're closed. Most of the agency is closed for most services, and we do all of our CEUs and training and all that kind of stuff, you know, for about 4 or 5 days. And we had local law enforcement come in and train 100% of the staff in how to respond to an active attack. It's pretty dramatic. You know, they bring, you know, the guns with the blanks, and, you know, they fire, you know, so you hear that sound, you know. So we had to sort of prepare people that it was going to be an emotional day, and, you know, and kind of debrief afterwards. But one of the things that, you know, we had done is identify, you know, in addition to our offices, where the areas of shelter would be throughout the facility, and make sure that those doors, you know, could be secured, and that there were phones in all the rooms so that, you know, people would never feel trapped and unable to call for help. The training, the response we got from staff, they were pretty anxious about it beforehand. But I think they were actually very relieved, because the law enforcement officers that came to train us said that they were very pleased with our response, and that people did a very, very good job. So I think the anxiety in the few days leading up to it was very, very high, and then it was much better afterwards.
Thank you.
So I would just add, just parenthetically, having lived in Houston for 6 years myself, that I can't imagine police officers bringing blank firearms into an institution in Connecticut. I think it may be a uniquely Houston, Texas thing, but it is amazingly, it's very valuable in terms of having staff understand what things sound like, what things look like. In terms of staff training, as part of our recent COA, accreditation, we had to review all of our staff plan, our training manuals, our plans for, issues, security issues and things like that. We had to identify places that we would shelter in place, places that we would flee to, all of those things. But
Jonathan, did you think of them yourselves, or did the police help you come up with the plan?
So in our case, I don't want to say I caught it for myself, but the police didn't help us. So we're on the first floor of a building. And we have four egresses. So we have two egresses that are egress only, two doors that are egress only. And the staff now know that in an emergency, they go out those egresses and then they make their way to a park that's nearby. Our receptionist has a protocol. And in terms of times that we've ever had a need, so we have had times when we have had calls. We actually 2 years ago had somebody break into our cameras when they were Wi-Fi based and then call us and tell us that they were looking at us.
Oh, wow.
That was a little scary. But for the most part, we haven't had, thank God and goodness, the receptionist hasn't had to use any of those protocols. One of the other things that we have, which I failed to mention is that our alarm systems go directly to the police. They do not pass through the monitoring station. I mean, some do, most do not. So for example, if our egress doors are activated, it goes immediately to the police so that they know, because our staff know there is no leaving those doors unless you're leaving through running. How else to put it. So if you are pushing through those doors, then the police are immediately called. If our clinicians press any panic buttons, then the police are immediately called. There are a few, so there's some differentiation there.
Yeah, someone I think had asked if we had had any credible threats, and thankfully on our campus, we have not that I'm aware of, at least in my time here. Although just a couple weeks ago, there was a high school student killed at a local high school not too far from our campus. By another student who brought in a weapon. And it's still unclear what the whole shooting was about. They seem to have been friends and nobody knows exactly what happened, but that obviously spiked a lot of concern, even though it wasn't directed at us. It was in a school that many people, you know, knew where it was, and some of the streets near our facility were closed to, you know, give the school plenty of room so people had to drive home a different way that day. And so obviously that raised some anxiety, you know, as people were sort of seeing it on the news and experiencing it in the neighborhood.
Hello, this is Cindy. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Hi. Well, I'm calling from Kansas City. So we have had an
good luck this weekend.
Yes, here. Okay. So first we'll show them. Sure. And even have one other thing here, real quick. Brought my Mahomes hair too. So we're set for the game. But so you know, it's been what now? 4 years ago, I guess, we had the situation out at our Federation campus, which houses actually eight different Jewish organizations. We're one of them out there. That's on the Kansas side. And then on the Missouri side, we have our own standalone building. But on the Kansas side, we've made a lot of changes since that day. And some of the things I'll tell you that you learn, that you don't learn unless you do a drill that seems somewhat simple but had never been tested, was one of the things was that day our food pantry was open and they were trying to reach me to let me know what was going on. It was a Sunday, and the cell phones didn't work from the basement. It's like they would kind of work and then kind of fall apart because of all the traffic of other people trying to call. And so then we totally didn't know what we, you know, were panicked that something had happened to them because we couldn't get back to them. And also within the building that day, they came upstairs, basically ran right into danger because they actually thought it was a storm they were hearing. They couldn't understand what the announcement was. And it's in the basement, so there's no windows. They couldn't see out. So they thought it was a spring storm And so they came up because the overall intercom systems weren't working well enough to broadcast exactly what was going on. All of that, I feel comfortable that we've got a great team now that is made up of different ones from each organization in the building. So I represent JFS, but then Don Goldman's on all of our emails as our executive director, and then I have a backup as well in case I'm going to be gone. And we get together about once a month with the director of security, which is actually hired by the campus. Which, you know, comes out of part of our rent somehow. I mean, we all contribute. And he leads the effort to get us all to coordinate on these things. So we have a PR group that would handle any kind of communication with the newspapers, reporters afterwards, because like in the first, the real situation, that wasn't laid out. And there was a bunch of, with a shared building like that, there turned out to be a lot of egos involved, I guess is what you would call it, people arguing over who should be the spokesperson. And so we have all that lined out now. And we have even sample, like, if this is the situation, here's the draft of what we would say, and then they edit it for the situation. So we can turn it around a lot quicker. And then that takes the responsibility off of us. The PR group's a separate group that works in alignment with us, but then that leaves the operation group, which is more what I'm part of, to coordinate things like who should be in and out of the building, how are we going to handle backup recovery. And the changes we've made on campus, we have armed security guards at each gym, but it is a community campus. So it's there's a full gym there, there's a school, there's other things. So it is very much an open door there. But they did get some funding. I don't think it was through Homeland Security, though. I think it was just through a donation to buy these cameras that we have two access points to our parking lot. So every car that comes in, it takes a picture of your license plate. And then that's processed through our local police. They have a giant database that processes all that rapidly. We're not involved from that point on, but if the police, if it would flag a stolen car or a suspicious car or something like that, the police would automatically dispatch and get over to us.
Wow.
And that's important because of our situation. It all took place in the parking lot. So we have all these great building, and the building things help because they really do think that it would have been brought into the building, except the gentleman who was, well, I don't think I should call him a gentleman, the guy who was doing this, as he approached the building, he saw one of our security officers. And so he turned around and left at that point. So I think having dressed security officers does make a difference. Other things we've done, so then since then we built our own building on the Missouri side that's a standalone just for JFS. So within that we could incorporate security, learning from that and knowing we weren't going to have the resources to have security officers here. So this building is all the time locked, and our appointments here or the clients that would be coming here would for the most part be by appointment. And so we have our food pantries here and mental health services and our older adult services, but we know who's coming. And so there's a buzzer system, they buzz in. And if someone doesn't have an appointment, our receptionist asks, you know, how can we help you today? What are you looking for? Also, one of the things we did is our sign out front does not say Jewish Family Services. It says JFS. Now, it does have our logo, which has the star in it. So, I mean, I think someone who was Jewish would pick up on that easily. But perhaps someone who was not, without seeing the word there, that might make a difference. I don't know. Also, we, at this building, so... Well, both buildings, we have the fobs like others have talked about, and it's totally locked down section by section. And then by design, client access is only on our first level.
And the second level is where all of our staff is. So if you would hear an unusual voice on the second level, it stands out because no one except for staff should be on that level. So that's an added layer. So that's just a little bit of what we've done.
That's great.
It is great. I just want to mention something that happened at the last call. You started up by saying that you lost communication with people that during one point in time. So what a lot of agencies have done is go back to walkie-talkies, and they've given them to everyone because no matter what happens, you know, your, you know, cell goes down and the landline's gone, you can still communicate with walkie-talkies, and you can get them on Amazon for pretty cheap. And they have different channels, so you can have different, you know, people with different channels. That was just something interesting I heard. And so, also, I know that the Homeland Security grant, this is what they said in the last meeting, is coming up soon. So you should go onto their website because there's a lot of money in the pot and it's not so difficult to write the grant. They don't ask a whole lot of questions and they could give upwards of $100,000. So I was hearing Carl saying the 65 plus another 50, you know, if you can make a case, potentially you could get money. So
I just wanted to comment and add to what people said. We have a lot of the things that other people brought up in terms of the locked facility, the IDs that people have to swipe to get in, the front desk area. We have the bulletproof glass around the receptionist and then the film on all the out front, the outside facing windows. But what's been really helpful is a couple of things that I don't think, I mean, some of it was mentioned a little bit here and there, but our federation hired security officers. They're not really security in terms of, so we do have like a vehicle that travels from one campus to another because we are all in separate places. So that's a community security kind of company that was hired through the Federation, and it travels across different campus areas and checks on different on situations. But what we have through the Federation is a centralized security office with former police officers like sheriffs, whatever, hired by the Federation. There are multiple people there by now. It started with one person. I think now they have maybe four or five people. And what they do is they inspect all the agencies and the buildings. They do all the safety trainings annually. So whatever our accreditation requires, but also anything that they might find something new in terms of safety and security has been helpful. For example, they're now working with an Israeli company installing the shields. So when your system, communication system is not working, you know, if something happens, if there's a loud noise, like shot or something is going on whatever floor, whatever building, you know, the shield will trigger basically and start communicating directly with police. And, you know, you get an alarm in multiple agencies. One is for your, you know, what the internal alarm will look differently than external alarm, something happening at the other agency. So they also looked at the phone system. So right now, the alarms that we get, something in the hallway, the blinking lights and the announcement. Sometimes people, when you have a lock, when you have a client in your office, or you have a meeting in a room with a closed door, you might not hear or see that. So now they're going to test, we're rolling out, it's going to come to everybody's cell phones. So if I'm in the building, you know, or out of the building, basically, I'm going to get an alarm on my cell phone in addition to whatever is happening in the agency. So those things, I think having them on board and giving us trainings on whatever comes up, because things come up, you know, like there's a suspicious parcel alert and they come in and they talk about it and what to be aware of. They train our staff on safety, like when you're in the field, being aware on how to park and what to look for and things like that. It's been really great partnership with our federation.
So we have something similar to what everybody's talked about in Chicago. We do use a blue point system, so similar to the fire poles that you have in your halls. We have blue poles that go directly to the police that do similar to what you talked about in Detroit, where we get notice on our phones. Depending on what building is your home building or buildings you typically work out of. We have 7 different buildings spread throughout Chicago, each of which have their own different security needs.
Oh my goodness.
We also have a light that blinks outside the building if a blue alarm has been pulled, so that somebody who's coming in the building knows not to.
That's good.
Which I think is helpful, because otherwise you'd have no idea if you were outside the building whether or not to walk in. We did realize we do ongoing drills, we do annual trainings, but we realized we were missing people who were new to the agency, right? We constantly have new employees. So it's now part of a day one checklist that each new employee spends time with the office manager of their facility, learning the security procedures, how you do a lockdown, how you use Blue Points, where your safe rooms are, so that they don't have to wait until there's a next drill, as well as posting on the back of every door of every office in every conference room, where the safe spaces are, what to do in case of all sorts of emergency, because we have so many visitors. So similar to like going to a hotel, but without the checkout information. It's just up on every door.
That sounds like a good idea to do that when they come in.
Yeah, it's been really, people just feel better. Mm-hmm. I do have two questions. One was specifically for Kansas City, for Cindy. You talked about how you think about coordination in the event of an emergency. And we're good at doing drills by building, but we've been interested in doing a more community response coordinated drill that can, while we have a document that says here's who does PR and here's where people should go, we haven't done anything that felt more like a community response. So I heard that you have plans. I was curious if you had executed a more organization-wide or community-wide drill to practice. That was my first question.
Do I have to unmute you? There you go. No, you have to unmute yourself, Cindy. Top right corner.
There we go. Got it. On ours, we have not actually had a drill, but I don't know. We're pretty small as far as being spread out, that I feel confident that it was that we do all know our roles, and we do have the phone system, like someone else mentioned, that is only for emergencies, and the head of security and his team are the ones who initiate that and says, okay, we need to meet. We have squack room or whatever, where an emergency room that we all are to gather at, and if it's occupied or that's not safe, then he'll tell us where to go. And so we have kind of a control room already pre-planned for all of this. And he then has worked to control, include outside of our core groups. There's like our JVS is in a separate building. Of course, all the synagogues are separate, but yet we consider part of the community. But they don't sit on this core team. They would only wait for instruction. They're not a participant, because initially we had someone from every agency, and it was too many people in the kitchen, so to speak. We had to narrow the ones that were the bigger agencies that were going to lead the charge, but then communicate. So one of the other things we found when this did take place around communication was like employees of mine were receiving notifications via the children's center where their kids were at, mm-hmm. from their teachers at the school, because the school sent out a release before the rest of the building was notified. So I had panicked parents who are also my employees saying, but you're my employee, why wouldn't you know what's going on? So now we have an order that any communication is to be released. So someone's not going to hear from their synagogue or the school or whatever first, that it's going to go through this hierarchy so it gets distributed. I'm not sure if that helps, but that's kind of how we've coordinated it. Again, we're not as spread out as what it sounds like you are, though.
Yeah, we're looking at considering it by community, right? North suburb, city, but it does speak to the complexity, so that helps. My other question is, we too have done a security audit. External people have come through and said, here's the things you must do, here are some things you can do. My question is, for others who have done security audit, how has it played with your staff, or how have you managed with your staff? There's going to be some things that we choose not to do, right? That the cost is simply prohibitive, or it's beyond a direction we want to go. And yet we want this message that we staff safety is of concern to us. So have others run into that concern from their staff of, hey, you just had an expert come and say, this is a way that you could keep us safer, and now you're choosing not to.
One of the things that we try to do is kind of reinforce everything that we're doing, you know, and why we're doing it for safety, and let people know that we're starting with the things that we think are most urgent, but that our commitment is to continue, you know, down that path as much as we can. And, you know, while I have had a little bit of pushback, I think mostly I've gotten a lot of positive responses from staff that when I say, you know, we're about to roll out the next phase of our security plan and here's what's happening and why, people see that it ties back to sort of a long-term plan and that we're working our plan. And so I try not to say, you know, no, we won't do that. I'll try to say, you know, I'm going to add that to the list and our security committee will have to prioritize, you know. And then, the other thing I talk to staff a lot about is the, you know, we have to walk a fine line between wanting to feel safe, but also not wanting to feel like a jail or a prison, you know. And so we are going to make choices about what we do so that our, you know, that we don't, you know, create a punitive environment. And so getting them to talk about, you know, those compromises sometimes helps a little bit too. I don't know that there's one easy answer, but on the whole, I think people have been here, at least in Houston, have been very reassured to see that we're taking it seriously.
I know we have a few people from Canada on this call. Brianna, no, Shana, right? Are you on this call still? What's going on there in Winnipeg? Oh, do I have to unmute you? Hold on.
No, I got it. Okay. I got it.
Okay.
It was more challenging than I thought it would be. In Canada, we do a lot of the same things that I've heard said throughout. And I can really only speak to Winnipeg and specifically to our JCC, which is where we're housed. We have security guards at our front entrance, which is our main entrance. There's also a security guard at the school entrance. There's one school in our building, but only students enter in through the school entrance. No other card carrying people can go through there. But the emphasis in our building has been on staff training, which was actually born from an incident that we had. It would have been now three or four years ago. And it had actually absolutely nothing to do with our facility, and it had nothing to do with anybody entering our facility, but there was a high-speed car chase that almost ended, God help us, in our parking lot.
Okay.
And when the building was notified by the police had cordoned off an attempt to corral this car, had blocked off both ends of our street, and there was no way of getting out or in, etc. And really, all the police wanted was for us to stay inside. It was a very simple instruction. Unfortunately, it got miscommunicated, or it wasn't communicated quickly enough. And within our JCC, there is a there's a gym, and so members of the gym heard something about police being outside, and some of them, or at least a couple people, panicked and ran outside. which was a big problem for the police because they couldn't secure the area. They were trying to like get people out of the way with like all of their bulletproof shields and all this kind of stuff. It was not good. And this was actually a chase that ended in police having to discharge weapons. So it was not good. Right. So based on that awful response from our organization or from our building, all the staff received training. They set up three levels of communication in terms of distribution of information. First and foremost, there's a WhatsApp group for all of the CEOs and COOs.
Okay.
So that any information that the campus, the COOs and the CEOs get it. For any organization that's housed in the building. We still haven't been able to coordinate with other organizations, say synagogues or what have you, that are not on our campus, which I think is a gap that we have, because there have been incidents at synagogues or what have you that could easily translate to our space. In terms of...
What's the second level of communication?
So the second level of communication, we have a multiple alarm system. We have an alarm system like it sounds like everybody else has, where it's
right.
Different codes and it goes through a PA. There's also an old school bell system, so that if all else fails, there's a horrific bell that is going to ring and it's going to be awful. However, if everything fails and that's the only thing that works, that's great. And all of that goes directly, like anything that is building wide and within the building infrastructure notifies the police.
Okay.
As well as fire, et cetera, et cetera. In terms of our security guards themselves, they are not armed. It is absolutely not a big practice pretty much anywhere in Winnipeg, and not so much, much less so in Canada. Whenever we have larger scale events, we have uniformed officers, police officers on site. And that's been a standard practice for quite some time. It's same deal with our high holiday services at synagogues and that sort of thing. There's always armed police personnel there rather than in addition to security. So one of the things I am interested in that I thought was really interesting that was brought up was training for reception specifically. And I'd be interested in doing a bit of research into that, because I do think that there's potential for our building.
If anyone has a training for their reception staff and they want to share it with the network, send it to me and I'll put it up on our affinity group folders, and you can look in that if anyone has one. I'm not sure anyone does.
Yeah, at least I'll look and see if I have a copy of what we presented, and if so, I can send it to you.
Okay, and then Shana, you could look at in the resource library. I'll get you the information.
Thank you.
The other thing that I'll just mention is because our building is 2 stories tall, and in addition to employing people with disabilities and having clients with disabilities, in the stairwells on the second floor, we have evacuation sweats that are designed. So if someone can't, you know, it's an emergency and you can't use the elevator, you can put somebody in an evacuation sweat and take them down the stairs. But it can also be used if someone, God forbid, was injured and you needed to move them and they weren't able to move on their own. So we've installed those. Unfortunately, the company we bought them from wants to charge us an enormous amount of money for training. So we're going to put together a separate training with another local organization to make sure that everyone, you know, has some practice. But for those of you who live near snow, it's sort of like a rollout toboggan. So it's not really that hard. You just lay down on it and strap them in and slide them down. So it's not that complicated, but we want to be able to practice with all the equipment that we have.
Right. So did anyone else feel like they wanted to tell us anything, Laura, Linda, Kathy, about what they're doing, response to anything we've heard? And I'm not sure who's in 407, the area code 407. Is that anyone? Oh, well.
Okay, hi, Gina, this is Carrie. I actually am on another, I'm on another call or another phone, and it's a 4071.
Did you want to say something?
For us, for Gulf Coast, we didn't have a whole lot more. I mean, everybody covered a lot of information, a lot of groundwork. We did have an incident where we had a threat probably about less than a year ago, and we had to have a secured officer, a police officer actually in his car sit out in front of our building for, I believe it was 3 days, if I'm not mistaken. But outside of that, we haven't had any threats. We've been very fortunate, so I'm very happy about that. But, you know, we continue to write grants and so on and so forth. Excuse me. Excuse me, goodness, to be able to secure our front. We do have key fobs and whatnot to be able to get in, and you have to be able to show your ID. And like I said, similar to what everybody else has said, I don't know if there's anything much additional, though.
Well, one thing I'll mention that our security company does for us is that if the security guard is not on site or is otherwise occupied or they can't find him for whatever reason, and somebody is walking to their car, not 100% of our staff are able to park inside our gate every day because there's just not enough space. We have a dedicated phone line, and they can call the command center to the security office, and they will stay on the phone with them until they get to their car safely and tell them that they're okay. And so that's been just another little thing that doesn't really cost much, but it's been kind of a source of reassurance to their staff that if they forget to bring their car inside the gate because they're going to work late, right, they don't have to walk by themselves. They just call the company and say, stay on the phone with me, and they just talk to them until they get in their car and have the doors locked and are driving away.
Well, sounds like everyone's doing as much as they can to make their agency safe. So let's hope we stay safe. It's a crazy world. So anyone else want to say anything? Linda, Laura, before we move on to ending?
Hi, this is Linda. Just want to say our offices, most of our offices are at the Jewish Community Center, and we share offices with the Federation, and there is a division of the Federation called Safe Cincinnati that develops the processes and secures the buildings and runs the safety training. But you all have given me a lot to think about for things that we need to think about where we are on the Hebrew Union College campus too, because I don't know exactly what they're doing at our facility down there. But anyway, they could be a good resource for you, and I would like to connect them. You know, I'll send them the minutes from this meeting too, because I know everybody
there are no
can
minutes.
Always learn. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you
can listen to it online, but not them, I guess.
Oh, okay. Okay, because they might want to do that, because they are so much into the details beyond what
I'm not
aware
sure that
of.
We can do that, though, if they're not members. But you know, we could try to remember some of the things we talked about.
Lisa, is for people who are not already on their email list, there's an organization called Secure Communities Network, SBN. And if you sign up for their daily email distribution list, it's free. So every morning I get an email and it tells me what's going on related to security issues, both locally and around the country. And you can look and see if there's anything that you think might be a particular concern to you, your agency, or your community. And then it gives you resources where to look further. And so, you know, if you're interested, it's free and you just sign up online. And I can research kind of how to do that. It's been a while since I did it. And
that would be great. They talked a lot about that in the last call, that scan that they, everyone, thinks
the
that's
secure
really
community
important.
Network, right. Yeah. So it's you know, anyone in your organization can add themselves to it if they want, but I find that it's, you know, I can at least sort of, you know, sort of track if there seems to be kind of a pattern of activity emerging somewhere or something.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. So, Carl, do you remember what we're doing next time on?
I think we have a presentation next time, right?
March 23rd, right. So Beth Levine, who was here on our call, she had to leave early, she had told us, from Ruth Rails, is going to be talking about financial assistance. I think we're going to be talking about that and how you handle financial assistance and how you make your guidelines and things like that. And she's just going to start us off with what her agency does, but everyone else can be thinking about what they do.
So that's the day where the American Society on Aging conference, annual conference basically starts, like that day or the next day. So I will be traveling for most likely. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, that's the week of the ASA conference.
So we record all of these for us. So if you miss it and you want to hear it, you can go onto the website. I send you every time how to do it, but just mark that in some sort of folder so you'll remember and can go on your own whenever you want to, because it really hasn't changed since we started. So, well, thank you all for coming on. Carl, thank you. And
great. Well, thanks everyone for the discussion. I know it's not an easy topic to talk about, but I think it's good to share and know that we're not in this by ourselves.
That's right. Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.